Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 26th of August. A number of media outlets have been paying attention to driver's license suspensions and how they are hurting the poor. NPR ran a story centered on Milwaukee in December and January, and Vivian Wang from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote a piece titled "Ticket to Nowhere: The Hidden Cost of Driver's License Suspensions" that appeared in the paper on August 15, a very lengthy article. She highlighted several stories just to give you an idea of how this affects a person. She highlighted the story of April Williams, who in May of 2014 was putting groceries into her car at a store in Menominee Falls. She was pulled over by a police officer and given tickets for a broken taillight and for driving without insurance. She couldn't pay the tickets. She had filed for bankruptcy in 2012. She was unemployed. She kept driving to keep appointments for her children and also meeting a case manager at a W-2 agency for her job search. In September, she was pulled over for expired plates and got a ticket for operating while suspended. She didn't know that her license had been suspended because she didn't get the notice. She was homeless. Under state law, she was not allowed to drive for 2 years or until she paid off her tickets. And the story goes on from there. We'll give you the ending of that story as we talk about her and talk about this issue this hour of the program. We have two guests with us. Molly Gina is here. Molly is an attorney at Legal Action of Wisconsin. They provide free legal services to low-income people who might otherwise be denied justice without representation. And she works at the Center for Driver's License Recovery and Employability. She helps low or no income clients regain their driver's licenses through payment plans, community service, or other arrangements. Molly, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us by phone is Nicole Young-Todd, who joined the ACLU of Wisconsin Board of Directors a couple years ago. She's the Director of Policy and Research for Wisconsin Community Services, which is the largest nonprofit provider of services for offenders in the state of Wisconsin. She's also a part-time instructor of sociology at Milwaukee Area Technical College. Nicole, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's start with you and the attempt to get driver's licenses reinstated. What was really amazing to me was the number of people in Milwaukee, and particularly in poor African-American parts of this city, who have suspended licenses. I mean, it's a huge number, plus the number of people who are jailed for that offense.
Right, that's correct. And the main reason that they're losing their driver's licenses is because of their inability to pay traffic tickets. So that is the number one most common driver's license suspension or revocation in the whole state. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation puts out statistics every year, and in 2014, there were 221,362 suspensions for failure to pay a traffic ticket. So this has nothing to do with the underlying offense. It could be any sort of traffic ticket. It could be the broken taillight that Ms. Williams had, or you can't renew that plate on your that sticker on your plate, or it could be a speeding ticket or a reckless driving ticket, anything. And if you don't pay it, your driver's license is suspended for 2 years. And that made up over 56% of all the suspensions and revocations we have in the state of Wisconsin. So there are, some probably 100 ways to lose your license in this state, but that is absolutely the most common. And that is a suspension that's there just because of someone's inability to pay. I mean, people who get, I get a traffic ticket, I pay it. I might grumble about it, but I pay it. The people who are getting these types of suspensions are the people who cannot afford it. So we're suspending driver's licenses for people that are poor, that are, living in poverty, so that they then can't get to work and can't, there are so many jobs, like in Milwaukee, there are so many driving jobs that are out there that people could get, or even jobs that are outside of the city that they just can't get to without a driver's license if they live in the city, or even jobs that have nothing to do with driving, but they want to know you have a driver's license. They see that as, something that might show responsibility. So it's hard for them to even get jobs. So driver's licenses are necessary, and the people who are losing them are the people who are unable to pay.
And why is the suspension for such a long period of time when you compare it with what would appear to be more serious offenses where the suspension is not as long?
That's a very good question. It's as you said, the suspensions that are actually safety related are shorter. If you get too many demerit points, for example, you know, you get demerit points for all kinds of moving and non-moving violations, including speeding and reckless driving. The most your license can be suspended is for a year. If you get an operating while intoxicated ticket, the first one, the most your license can be revoked is 6 to 9 months. Yet these failure to pay forfeiture suspensions are 2 years. The legislature has played with that over time. I think there was a period before I started working here that where they were 90 days, and I think there was a period where they were 5 years. So it's jumped around quite a bit. It stayed at this 2 years for a while now, and it is more than double so many of the suspensions that actually are safety related.
Mm-hmm. And Molly, how often are people jailed for failure to pay?
Pretty often, courts have the ability to do either for traffic tickets. So if someone doesn't pay their traffic ticket, courts really have the option of issuing a warrant for their arrest or issuing a failure to pay traffic suspension. Milwaukee did show that, now I don't know that these are necessarily just traffic tickets, but for not paying municipal court tickets, a study was done by the Justice Initiatives Institute that showed at least 9,000 people, I believe, had been incarcerated for not paying tickets between 2008 and 2013, I believe. So that's happening as well. And that's also a problem, of course, because if people are going to jail and they can't pay and they sit in jail, then they might even lose the jobs that they have, or lose the ability to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a common problem as well.
And from what I've read, the cost of keeping people in jail is much, much higher than what money they're going to get from payment of fines, because people just simply don't have the money to pay the fines.
Correct. And I think that report showed that it costs about $103 a day to keep someone in jail. They're working off their forfeitures at about $50 a month. That's the rate that the legislature has put in place, and they're sitting and not able to pay these tickets. So they're not, the city's not collecting this money, and instead people are sitting in jail, costing more for them to be in jail for not paying tickets. These are not crimes. These are just not paying municipal ordinance tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And
Nicole,
something to that.
Sure.
So one of, from an administration of justice perspective, something people might not realize is that if you're indigent, which is just means that you're low income as a defendant, you actually have to prove that, and you have to go to court to do so. So there's different ways that you can prove that. Obviously, if you're being represented by an agency like Legal Action, they've already done the means testing, and the court understands that the defendant is low income. But if you're going in on your own, you have to prove that you can't afford to pay this fine. And then by statute, the judge has to consider other options, one of which is community service. Because obviously if you're low income, like Molly said earlier, she pays the fine. She probably pays it the easiest way available to her with her, debit card online. But that is not an option that is available to our clients. So they have to go in, prove indigency, which might mean two trips because they now have to get paperwork. And then, even then, our particular clients are not getting community service in the largest municipality in the entire state when they've proven their low income for their traffic tickets. So one of the options available by statute is not being given for failure to pay forfeiture tickets.
And how do you even know, how are you told that you have to prove indigency if you get a citation? Do the police officers tell you that? Do you get a notice in the mail? How does that happen?
When the police officer pulls you over, unless it's an extremely knowledgeable and, conscientious police officer, and they really have a lot of time to talk to you, they don't just automatically offer that if you're indigent, you have all these options. They just, here's your ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a non-mandatory court appearance. So many defendants, it doesn't say mandatory. They're not blowing off court, as a matter of, they're not being irresponsible. They don't realize that if they go, they do have the option once they get there to perhaps get a different outcome.
Right. And what's happening is because these tickets aren't mandatory, you don't have to appear in court for traffic tickets. A lot of people don't, right? They just kind of pay them even before the due date, and that's that. So if you don't appear, a default judgment may be entered, and then you'll have time to pay. And the courts are required to send you a notice to your last known address that does say if you can't pay due to poverty, you can request a payment plan or community service. Municipal courts, you know, can issue, you know, can order community service for these. Not all the courts, I think, are doing that, unfortunately. I think usually it says, you know, if you can't pay, contact us and you'll have a hearing. It doesn't maybe mention community service or mention some of the options. And people who, if they get the notices, don't know, you know, they're scared to go to court maybe, or they think, well, I can't pay, so what am I supposed to do? And they don't know that if they say the magic words like, I'm being represented by Legal Action or public, you know, a public defender, right, or I receive food stamps, that that will help them, that they then can't be suspended or a warrant can't be issued. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the problem as well.
So it's not uncommon for people to get this warrant, realize they can't pay, know that they need their car if they can afford to keep the car, and in some cases they have to give up a car to go to jobs or to take their children to various places. So they're driving for quite some period of time, and then you run the risk of getting stopped because your license is suspended, and so you got another ticket.
Right, and that's the cycle. So unfortunately, people drive anyway because they have to. They just don't have an option here. You know, we have, you know, not to disparage our public transportation system, but a lot of my clients may have second or third shift jobs out in other suburbs that they just, the bus just doesn't go there or it doesn't run that late. And so they take the risk. Some, you know, some people, nope, my license is suspended. That's it. You know, I won't drive. But, and some people have actually lost their jobs because they lost their driver's license. So, but otherwise, unfortunately, the reality is that people keep driving. So yes, then they can maybe accumulate more tickets or perhaps get arrested if there's a warrant out there that they didn't realize was out there. And it's just a terrible cycle of poverty.
Mm-hmm. And eventually, isn't this the case that after 7 years or so, Nicole, those fines are all kind of forgiven or tossed out? So if you can get away with it for 7 years, you're in the clear?
That's not my understanding. I believe that courts have the ability to collect for quite a long period of time. Now, if courts do wipe the fines out after 7 years, it's probably because their files are much, it's much easier for them to do that and then just continue to collect in different ways, like turn it over to a collection agency or and also to do the tax intercept refund program, the TRIP program that the state of Wisconsin has. You know, if courts are wiping them out, I don't think it's all the courts, but if they are, then they're also still trying to collect through different mechanisms. So the fine doesn't just magically disappear and everything's fine. It'll come out one way or another.
And what is the tax intercept program?
It's a tremendously effective and efficient program that the Department of Revenue runs. And last year, over $21 million of that program went to the courts alone.
Was intercepted.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So this is people, when they file their tax returns, it's already there. The DR is the keeper of all this information. And we just, you know, this is one of the best ways to collect. And that, I guess, that's the piece that we've been, you know, one of the most basic points we've been making successfully to legislators who want to change this law. Is that why are we taking away one of the best ways they have to make money in order to make money to pay their fines? If you tell someone they can't drive and they keep getting tickets for going to work, how are they supposed to pay their fines?
Mm-hmm. And that program is at no cost to the courts. So many courts utilize that. They just send the debts over to the, you know, State Department of Revenue, and the cost actually comes back to the defendant. They actually charge them, the Department of Revenue charges them $5 per ticket to collect, to intercept that refund before you get it and send it to the courts. Hmm. So there's no cost to the courts to do this. You know, most of them utilize this, and even though they may not collect it in those first 2 years that they've suspended their driver's license, they often do collect it, as was shown by that huge amount that was collected last year.
Right. So what's the alternative here? Because people will listen to this and say, well, we are, you know, driving is a dangerous thing. You know, you've got to make sure that you have people who have licenses. You have to make sure that the cars are in working order so you can see what's happening. You don't want broken taillights, et cetera. How do you balance that need? And it's a valid one for having people who are safety conscious and are following the rules on the road with having something go wrong if you're poor and not being able to follow all the rules. What's the answer to it?
Right. I think that we just shouldn't be suspending people's licenses for failure to pay. So for the safety reasons, you can still, your license will still be suspended. So, you know, if you, again, that operating while intoxicated, you know, right. Very serious, very, you know, risk, huge risk to people's safety, you'll be revoked anyway, whether you pay the ticket or not. So I think that by not suspending people's licenses for failure to pay, we will still have people who are suspended and revoked for all of the safety reasons. And so we won't have that problem. The thing is right now, you know, if I get a speeding ticket and I pay it, I still get the points, you know, on my driving record. That still affects my insurance rates. You know, I'm still punished for that.
Yeah.
But I'm able to pay it on time, so I can keep driving unless I get too many of them and then I get a point suspension. You know, that would happen to me as well. But for my clients, they get the same exact speeding ticket that I do, same punishment. It goes on their driving record. It may be accompanied with a short suspension, depending on how fast they're going. It may not. It affects their insurance rate. It has the same effect as it does on me. Yet they get this extra 2-year suspension because they're unable to pay it.
Right.
Again, solely because they're unable to pay for no other reason, just due to their poverty.
Fill in the rest of Ms. Williams' story. We left her, I don't even know if we got to the community service that she was doing.
Right. Yes, she did. She was able to complete community service. She had tickets in Menominee Falls Municipal Court and was able to complete community service. And that's actually been one of the great things. Since our program has started, we have succeeded in getting a lot of courts to order community service, to lift these suspensions and order community service for the forfeitures. And that's been such a benefit to the community, because for people who really can't pay, community service, obviously, service to the community. They work at nonprofits and they work off their forfeitures at these nonprofits. So it's a win-win. It works for, it's good for the nonprofits. It's good for the person. It's good for the community. And that's money that the courts, you know, may not collect, you know, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually had clients who have gotten jobs out of this, who've volunteered.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
They've worked at, you know, they've volunteered at community service sites and either made a connection or been able to put it on their resume as something they're doing every day. And I've had clients say, I loved that experience and they loved me. And some say, you know, they'll hire me if something comes up. They're a nonprofit, but, you know, but some have actually gotten jobs out of it. So it's a really great way to serve the community.
Mm-hmm. And tell me again, Nicole, how do people find out about that, and how often is that utilized, community service?
Well, when we are representing a defendant, we are advocating, you know, attorneys like Molly are advocating on their behalf and asking for the best outcome for their client. And so community service, as Molly has, you know, correctly stated, is often one of the only ways they can pay off their fine so that they can drive legally. So we'd be advocating for that. If the judge doesn't grant it, it's within the judge's purview to do that. It is worth noting, we get community service at almost every single municipality in the state of Wisconsin. We've seen, and maybe Molly can speak more to this, but we've seen community service being granted to our clients for even things that are not necessarily safe driving, you know, I mean the moving violations. Because the judges realize, and these are in conservative parts of the state, the judge realizes that this is the client trying to be responsible and do the right thing, and that they don't have the money to even up. And a couple things that I think are worth noting, going back to the safety piece of that you were just discussing, the Brookings Institute did a study about 10 years ago that showed that people who are suspended for economic reasons, so failure to pay forfeiture, are of the same safety, general safety level as people who are not suspended. So the difference is that they can't pay. They're not more dangerous drivers. And that's a fallacy, that's an error in thinking that people have, is that if you don't have a license, that means you're a bad driver. That's not true at all. As Molly's, you know, example showed, you know, drivers who can pay speed and do all sorts of infractions, but they pay them, it's over.
And courts do have other alternatives to community service for those that don't, you know, we do have some kind of outlying municipalities who aren't really comfortable ordering community service, so they will actually stay forfeitures for people who can show that they're unable to pay due to poverty. They have the option of modifying judgments, permanently staying the forfeitures, you know, giving more time to pay, really, really extended payment mm-hmm. plans. There are a lot of options that these courts can use. They do have a lot of discretion. They just have to do something other than a suspension or a warrant if you can establish that you're unable to pay due to poverty.
We welcome phone calls from our audience on this issue. We're talking about the hidden cost of driver's license suspensions and how it is affecting minorities in the city of Milwaukee and poor people, and asking whether you think that there's a failure of justice here. What is the answer to this? How do we ensure that people are driving, you know, without their taillights broken and make sure that they're following the rules? But is there something wrong with giving them 2-year suspensions when other kinds of driving infractions may be much more serious and may only get a 9-month infraction? And what do you do when people can't pay this? What are we to do about that as a society? And it keeps people who are poor from being able to seek employment or getting to their jobs or doing driving as a job because their licenses are suspended. We have two guests with us, Nicole Young Todd, who's with the ACLU Board of Directors. She's the Director of Policy and Research for Wisconsin Community Services, and she's a part-time instructor of sociology at MATC. Molly Gina, attorney at Legal Action of Wisconsin. They provide free legal services to low-income people and at the Center for Driver's License Recovery and Employability. She helps low or no-income clients regain their driver's licenses through payment plans or community service or some of the other arrangements we've been talking about. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. So join the show. We'd love to hear from you. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we have many phone calls coming in, so let's go to them, and we start with Melissa in Eau Claire. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not from the Milwaukee area. I live in Eau Claire, and, you know, the problem is clearly statewide. I lost my license over a $15 parking ticket,
ooh,
so it wasn't even a moving violation. The ticket inadvertently, you know, I lived in a college area, it got put on another car, it blew away or something. And after time, you know, going through it quickly here and driving while suspended, it's gotten up to like $1,000. Unfortunately, I'm indigent, I'm medically living with my parents. So they didn't offer me any community service. When I went in to ask for a payment plan, they told me they wanted, you know, so much money per month. I told them, like, I'll give you $10, you know, a month, and they wouldn't accept that. So they're not even giving people options at this point. And then the question I did have, isn't there, I'm not very up with this, but isn't there some kind of debtors prison where you can't go to jail because you can't pay money? Isn't there something like that?
Molly. Yes, we really don't want debtors prisons. First of all, Melissa, I'm sorry about your situation. Unfortunately, that is all too common. But it is unconstitutional to send someone to prison for their inability to pay, solely for their inability to pay. That is, in fact, a debtors prison. We argue that that also extends to failure to pay forfeiture suspensions. However, that is, you know, a different issue since people whose licenses are suspended are not necessarily going to jail.
So what does she do about this? I mean, you can understand, even maybe if you had $15, students particularly, too. I got a ticket. You know, they forget about it. They stuff it in the car. They put it somewhere. I'll get to it at some other point as I'll get to my homework or whatever. And then, you know, all of a sudden you've got collection agencies coming after you. Her story is unbelievable. It's up to $1,000 and she had a $15 ticket? Are you kidding?
That is unbelievable. And that is, parking tickets are something we failed to mention, that if, you know, you get a parking ticket and you don't pay it, like you said, forget to pay it, put it away, or can't pay it, that will suspend the registration of your vehicle. You keep driving not realizing that, or have to drive, as we've already discussed, and then you start getting pulled over because you're driving with a suspended vehicle, and then you start getting pulled over because your license is suspended. So it is a really vicious cycle. You know, I know she mentioned that she doesn't have the ability to pay. The statutes, again, do require that, you know, judges have to consider that, and they have to consider your poverty if you're getting any public assistance, or again, being represented by us, which she obviously isn't, unfortunately, or have a public defender. They have to lift the suspensions. Do all judges do that? I don't know. You know, they do it when we go, and that's why it can. It's really important to have an attorney, but again, can't afford that either.
Is there legal aid in Eau Claire?
Yes, we legal action. We actually are in 39 counties in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So we should be up there. Yes.
Right. That's where you need to go, I think, Melissa. Nicole, you want to respond to this?
I think it's just so illustrative. And I really, again, thank you for calling, because you said it so perfectly. You are a student. You were trying to do the right thing. You were trying to, people are doing everything right. And yet our government can't see that, can't recognize that. You know, I'll give you $10. No, we don't want your $10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's ridiculous. And, you know, I certainly can't give legal advice, certainly on the radio, and I'm not an attorney, but there, you know, our system has appeals processes, you know, that you might be able to pursue or to look into if you get a judgment that's unfavorable. Of course, there's always statutes on things, and, you know, obviously if it's some time ago, it might be passed and the judgment might stand. But, you know, and that's the problem, is that people are trapped and they don't know their options. And, you know, what I say is that, well, people, and I'll just use Milwaukee as an example because that's where I live, but you go, it's not where I'm from, by the way. You know, I'm from the Door County area, and I've seen poverty all around the state. And I'll say this, that the poverty that exists in Milwaukee is so extremely different that, yes, this is a statewide issue, but people who are trapped in cycles of poverty and segregated neighborhoods where they can't get out more than a mile from where they live, that's not the same around the state, you know, and I think that's the most fundamental thing. So in Milwaukee, you know, the judge is sitting there because they're getting paid to. They don't have to park. Their parking is free. But for someone to have to come down, and when I park down there for an hour-long meeting in the courthouse, it cost me $9.
Ooh.
So if someone is driving someone down there, because they are not supposed to be driving, so someone comes down there, they park, $9, they go in, and this is because they're poor, so obviously $9 is a lot to them.
Right.
And they have to go in and wait, you know, whether they have an appointment or not. Sometimes judges are late, sometimes they're on time, but you still have to wait in the courtroom. So they're spending, you know, $9 an hour there to go see the judge to try to extend their ticket. So the judge will say, well, come see me, put $20 down on the ticket, and we'll extend it out for, you know, 60 days. And if you can't pay it, come back. $20, if you're unemployed, might as well be $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And to make them come down to the courthouse, and these, you know, people who are living in poverty don't have checkbooks and debit cards. They can't send the check in and let it go. They can't, you know, they can't just put it on their debit card. They have to deal with cash. And for that, they need to come down and do a receipt. Or if they need more time to pay and they don't have the money, then what? You know, they could try to do everything right, but if we're not recognizing anything but money as the way to be responsible, then you're going to continue this cycle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Melissa, for the call. Let's go to John in Nina. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
I often wondered about how when a wealthy person gets pulled over and they get a speeding ticket, it would be about like me having to pay $1 or something. And then if someone in poverty gets pulled over and gets a speeding ticket, it would be about like me having to pay $1,000 for a speeding ticket. And so I'm just wondering if it would ever be plausible in some way to assign fines based on your state income tax bracket.
Molly.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, John. I think that would be tough to do because courts don't necessarily have access to that information, and let alone police officers who are pulling you over, who are, you know, writing the ticket amount on there. But I do think, again, that that should be a factor when you, you know, when you do get to the court to tell them, you know, they do need to base things on your income and your ability to pay, because you're absolutely right. A speeding ticket is the same to a poor person as it is to someone who can afford it, except one can afford it and one can't. The punishment is the same, but the consequences and the amount are not.
Josh in Toma. Hi.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Question I had for your two guests on, I'm very sympathetic to the problems that do arise for the poverty and unable to pay their ticket. I guess my thought, and I'm wondering, what percentage of these people actually then do have car insurance? So as I'm looking at it for myself as a medium income person and living paycheck to paycheck, that I have to, and I feel the responsibility to, if I'm going to be driving, I also need to have car insurance. But if I get into an accident with one of these people, they don't have insurance. Now they have just taken me and put right. my lifestyle, my paying for my bills and my family and everything else in jeopardy then also.
Mm-hmm. Nicole?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that we hear all of the time. And it's a valid point. I mean, probably a great many of us have either personally gotten into accidents with people who are uninsured or know someone who has. And of course, then you have to pay your deductible if you have insurance. And that's frustrating. And I totally understand that. Of course, as you probably know, that, you know, car insurance was not mandatory in Wisconsin until June 1st of 2010. And at that time, we fought it tooth and nail. We were the second to last state to get car insurance, because we had done a lot of analysis. I'm sorry, mandatory auto insurance. We had done a lot of analysis along with the Wisconsin Insurance Alliance, which is the sort of largest trade organization of insurers in the state. And we all agreed that we, at that time in Wisconsin, we had about a 15% uninsured rate. So 85% of drivers were insured even without the mandatory law. Today, it's about a 13% uninsured, so it's, the needle's moved a bit, but certainly not enough to account for the fact that now the third most commonly written ticket in the entire state of Wisconsin is driving without insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So it went from not existing to being the third most commonly written ticket. And depending on where you get pulled over, it's $50 plus court cost if you're on sort of a city road. But if you're on a highway, a county highway, it's going to be a lot more, because the circuit court charges more for their tickets wherever you are in the state. And I forgot exactly where you live, but basically everyone, it's more expensive on a highway or a state road than on a city road or a village road or something like that. So when you get to get back to the frustration of all of this is that it didn't really change much in Wisconsin, except it actually, if you look at on balance how much damage it's done in terms of people getting tickets that they can't pay for not having insurance. If you sort of step back from it, how are you supposed to get insurance if you can't, how are you supposed to pay the ticket if you can't drive, and then get insurance if you can't drive? So we're on a couple fronts. We're hurting people instead of helping them to comply with the law. And we have a lot of clients, and maybe Molly can speak more to this, but they are trying to get insurance. They are working on it, but they are, like you said, you're living paycheck to paycheck, and so are they. And they have to decide between food, rent, or car insurance. And then they get a ticket for it, and now it's food, rent, car insurance, or paying the fine. So it really comes down to, what do you do? And money can only stretch so far, and yet all we do is keep piling on tickets for it, and that doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help the person who needs to pay their deductible. And so we all want everyone to have insurance. That's our goal. But we don't think that overly punishing people is going to be the way to get them financially to the place where they can afford it and everyone can be in a better position.
Molly, what's fair in this regard?
Well, on the insurance matter, the problem is that we don't have affordable insurance. So even though it's mandatory now, we don't have affordable insurance for low-income people. So as Nicole was saying, you know, these insurance companies, when they establish your rates, they base it on a lot of different things. One is the zip code you're in. Well, if you're in a place that has high crime, a low-income neighborhood, that automatically increases your rates, no matter, you know, who you are. It also does depend on your driving record. So unfortunately, our clients, since they have had a suspended driver's license at some point, that's how they get to us, their driving records don't look so hot. And insurance companies see that. So they raise their rates because of that. And it can depend on, you know, your credit history. It can depend on if you've had insurance in the past but let it lapse and then re-upped it and then canceled it.
Right.
You know, that doesn't look good. And that's unfortunately what low-income people do sometimes. If they can't afford to pay it 1 month, it gets canceled and then they try to renew it. So there's so many things stacked against them on their insurance rates that some of my clients have told me, you know, I'm saying, okay, you've got the driver's license, the car is registered. How about insurance? Let's do it, you know? And they say, they quoted me at $300 a month. You know, I'm making minimum wage with three kids, you know? And I'm like, that's much higher than my insurance is. I can't imagine paying that. So it's really difficult when it's not affordable. So it's just another problem that poor people face. The people who don't get insurance are the people who just can't afford it.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your call, Josh. Our number is 800-486-8655. Lori is next in Cottage Grove. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you.
Go right ahead.
Well, I just had a couple of comments to make. First, as long as we were just talking about insurance, I just wanted to bring up, if you've ever been the victim of a car accident from somebody that didn't have insurance, I worry so much that we're taking off the personal responsibility and shoving it onto other people. If that person drives without insurance, hits somebody, now the other person is now responsible for that damage. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that you're legally required to have insurance, and I think that much like, and for example, to that girl that called in about her parking ticket, there's a couple problems with that is that she's the one that got the parking ticket in the first place. Yes, she did the right thing by coming, you know, getting the fine, $15, but she forgot to pay it. So I think that a lot of this argument that you guys are saying, we're taking out so much of the personal responsibility from the person and just blaming everybody else. Courts have remedies. I'm actually a court clerk. We, you know, people call us and say, I can't come down to court. Well, write to the judge. Maybe you can do something else instead of coming all the way down here. We can set you up with a phone hearing. Our judge hands out community service to people that can't afford to pay their fines. We have people on $5 a month payment plans that owe thousands of dollars, but they only pay $5 a month. There are remedies if people actually come and take responsibility for their ticket. Most of the people that actually get their licenses suspended, and I know this because I work here, are the people that do nothing. They're the people that don't come to court. They're the people that don't ever contact us for any type of anything. Those are the people that are getting suspended. So I think, again, we're taking up the personal responsibility factor of you did this violation. You have to take responsibility for it. We'll help you. We'll give you payment plans. We'll give you community service. Uh-huh. But you have to make some effort, too.
All right. Thank you very much, Lori, for calling in. Nicole?
I think, you know, I wish that every single court were like yours. I really do. That, I mean, it sounds like your judge is really attuned to the issues that we're talking about. And you're certainly right, when there are so many options available, then it is a little bit harder to sort of sympathize or empathize. So I wish that all courts did that. But the other, I mean, $5 payment plans is a really great way to go. Understand, though, not all courts do that. And the other piece I wanted to just mention is that personal responsibility is certainly a consideration, but it has to be a consideration in the context of the structural barriers that people who are living in poverty face. You know, I mean, we are looking at the world with our eyes, with the eyes of the income that we have. And even though, some individuals, you know, would say, look, I struggle. You know, there are things that, you know, I sure would like to do that I can't afford. That's not the same as I can't eat. I can't eat if I pay this fine. And that is, unfortunately, what it comes down to is basic needs. Or I can't pay my rent, or I can't put shoes on my kid's feet. That's different, fundamentally different than I wish I could eat out more, but I can't because I'm trying to tighten my belt here at home. You know, and again, I'm not trying to be unsympathetic to people who are struggling as well, but there's sort of absolute deprivation, and then there's relative deprivation, and they're not the same thing.
Molly, you want to respond?
Yeah, well, I would also just add on her point about being a victim in a car accident, being hit by someone who doesn't have insurance, those people are still punished for that. If you're involved in an accident that's found to be your fault and you don't have insurance, the insurance company can sue you in court, get a judgment against you, and if you don't pay it, that's a 5-year suspension of your driver's license. So while we're talking about personal responsibility and that these people just kind of get away with it, that's really not true. If you don't have insurance and you are involved in an accident, your license can be suspended for that. So there is a punishment for that.
Thank you very much, Lori, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our guests are Molly Gina, who's an attorney at Legal Action of Wisconsin, and she is at the Center for Driver's License Recovery and Employability, helping low or no income clients regain their driver's licenses through payment plans, community service, or other kinds of arrangements. Nicole Young Todd is also here with the ACLU Board of Directors. She's the Director of Policy and Research for Wisconsin Community Services, which is the largest nonprofit provider of services for offenders in the state, and is a part-time instructor of sociology at MATC. One line, no lines are open right now. Just keep the number in mind. The number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls. Michelle in Rochester. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I guess my question was, for people who community service wouldn't work into their schedule due to, I mean, it seems like the people we're talking about today are working minimum wage jobs and, you know, 40 to 60 hour a week, you know, trying to make ends meet. It seems like community service wouldn't be as compatible with, like, someone's schedule like that. How come... Mm-hmm. You know, maybe taking a deductible out of their paycheck, like $5 a month or something. How come that doesn't work?
That is, I think municipal courts do have that option to garnish wages. It is a little bit difficult if their paychecks aren't very much. You know, they don't want to take a big percentage of that. That is a good question. I would say, though, that you know, we have that issue come up with our clients who just can't really fit the community service in. They have kids. They, like you said, are working a minimum wage job and, you know, don't have the time. And judges do have to consider that. And again, do have the discretion to intercept their tax refund or stay the forfeiture or, again, give them really low payment plans or give them lots and lots of time to pay. Extend it out for, you know, a few months and, you know, revisit their situation. So there are a lot of options for those people. I agree that community service is not always the best option for people.
Yeah. Well, going back to the case of Ms. Williams, here she is doing community service in a food bank, and obviously she was a person who could be eligible for all the food in the food bank, too. I mean, isn't that kind of ironic?
You know, it is, but I think, again, it's been really good for our clients to get that experience. Yes, they might be volunteering at places where they would be eligible for their services. There is irony to that. But it also has been so helpful for them to get that experience and, you know, see what it's like from the other side maybe and, you know, get a chance to be someplace every day and, you know, volunteer their time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Michelle, very much for the call. Pat in Waupaca, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking
sure.
my call. And no one has as yet mentioned the fact that some people probably simply cannot afford to own a car. And what about better public transportation?
Well, it certainly is an issue. We kind of had our hands full with all that's on the plate this hour, but... Yeah, but what she says is true, Nicole, that there is an adequate and pocketbook that you can afford expenses with public transportation. But in this area, you can't get to where the jobs are either unless you have a car, right?
Well, that's true. I mean, it's for our economic livelihood. The state really needs to look forward and not backward in terms of transportation solutions. I mean, I'm calling in because I'm in Wisconsin Dells today enjoying an amazing tourist attraction that our state loves. And I look around at all the cars around me and all the happy families, and I think, why can't people who we serve every day at the center come here? Why can't they give their children this experience? It's such an arbitrary reason. And, we're restricting their freedom because there is no way to get here if you can't drive a car. And it is very frustrating because people just want to live normal, happy lives. And I think the othering that, I don't want to go too far into that direction, because we don't have much time left, but I feel like we've othered this group of people so much that we don't realize, you know, with all our fines and do the right thing and be responsible, is that people are just trying to live.
Mm-hmm.
And they already have hard enough lives. And, you know, it does get frustrating because that's what we encounter every day, is people trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. Lynn writes on Facebook, Molly, this one will go to you. I think that the incarceration of the poor and black in Milwaukee and targeting drivers sounds like Ferguson, Missouri to me. The governor needs to take charge of the high incarceration rates and take responsibility for lack of public transportation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that comment, Lynn. Everything that's going on in Ferguson right now with, you know, the municipal judge just getting rid of all the warrants pre-2015, and I believe also lifting driver's license suspensions, you know, that is something that maybe that I would love to see us do, just sort of an amnesty, you know, lift all the suspensions, lift all the warrants, let people, you know, get their jobs and do what they need to do. I think that would be very effective here. And we do see very high incarceration rates and high suspension rates for African Americans in Milwaukee. That is a major problem, statistically and proportionately to people, to white people, and it's really a problem. And I've had plenty of clients, you know, anecdotally tell me, I don't know why the officer pulled me over. I can't figure out other than the color of my skin. They say that to me often, or tell me, not in Milwaukee, more in other suburbs, if they get pulled over out there, the first question the cops ask is, why are you out here? What are you doing here?
Thanks for your message on Facebook. Let's go to John in Menominee. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm listening to all this, and everything seems to be proportionate to the black person. That seems to be the, where everybody wants to draw their line at. But hey, you know, I've lived in a real poor neighborhood. I was poor most of my life. I'm working now, thank God. If you know you're not able to pay, you know, be a little more cautious on what you do taking care of your vehicle and try not to get these tickets to start with. I mean, it's like the caller you had like two callers back, you know, as she was a court clerk. You know, if you know you're not going to be able to pay it, be more cautious. And you've got to, you know, if you break the law, you have to pay the consequences. And then you had your other lady come on saying that, well, you know, if they have a car wreck and they're not insured, well, then the court, you know, put more on them. Well, if you're not paying it to start with, I mean, where is that going to draw a line at? Well, I've already lost my license for a year. Well, it's going to be 5 years now, or I don't have insurance. You know, where is the line that you have to be, like I say, responsibility for your actions? You know, if you break the law, whatever it is, you got to be responsible.
Nicole.
You know, that's something we hear all the time. And I appreciate your perspective. And you're in Menominee? You're all the way up north, right?
Yes, he's in Menominee.
And it's, you know, Wisconsin is so incredibly driven on work ethic and personal responsibility. I think we probably pride ourselves on that as a state, and I see no shame in that. The problem is not everyone has equal access. Like you said yourself, sir, you've been unemployed in the past, and you're thankfully employed now. We see people who are trying desperately to get employment, trying desperately to be able to make everything work, and they get pulled over for no other, and the only ticket they get is for something you couldn't have seen. You couldn't have seen. The car's registration is okay. No problems on the outside of the vehicle. They weren't speeding, so no moving violation. The only ticket they walk away with is something like driving with this, you know, driving, operating while suspended, which you cannot see from the outside of the vehicle. So the officer has to look at a legally driving car and look at that license, like look up the license plate on the back to figure out to pull that driver over. And sometimes that's not even the case, because the person to whom it's registered, we've all loaned our cars to people to drive if they're, you know, if it's a family member or close friend,
sure,
or something. So that is a common practice. And sometimes someone's driving your car and they don't realize that's a vehicle or whatever. So there are often cases where, like Molly said earlier, it's not that they did anything, you know, necessarily seeable that was wrong. So people are not pulled over for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that anecdotally over and over again in terms of certain drivers are pulled over
because of their race. I'm just going to say that.
Thank you both very much for being with us. A very interesting hour, and I'm glad we could highlight this for the hour. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Our pleasure. Molly Gina, who's at Legal Action of Wisconsin, and she's at the Center for Driver's License Recovery and Employability. Also, Nicole Young-Todd. Thanks, Nicole, for being with us.
My pleasure.
With the ACLU, Director of Policy and Research for Wisconsin Community Services and a part-time instructor at MATC. Thanks to Scotty Myers for production and on-air production of this program. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. It's a very interesting issue that that requires a lot of thought, deep thought. Good hour. Please stay with us. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return and talk about workplace happiness in the weekends.